This is the Transmission Times, part one, what COVID does to me.
I have never stopped being sorry that I can't visit my grandchild the way I had envisioned. I so want to be right there in person with him and know that it's not in everyone's ability right now to do that. And it's kind of sad, maybe heartbreaking. Boy, I would like to hug him and take care of him and give those two a break. It's pretty hard being pandemic parents. And it's always hard to be a new parent. Sure would like to have helped them out a little bit more.
Even talking to a friend today, she was mentioning a moment she had when she was going on a bike ride and she heard like a music and laughter from a garden, and she couldn't help herself, and she opened the door and there was this event organized with like people, like a band playing jazz music and people just having a good time and kids running around and like people sitting together. And it felt like from another world. That's how she described it, even though it was so normal to do that before.
I think people are getting pandemic fatigue, and yet we gotta like hunker down and just stay calm and carry on, which is a great phrase, you know? Like, I mean, I live with that ideology from my husband because he's British. And so, you know, he's taught me a lot through this pandemic. You don't complain about it. You just carry on and do what you have to do. Sometimes I'm so Miss Drama Queen and I fall apart and I'm very emotional. But there he is, you know, steady, steady as she goes. My husband, he's just rock solid, getting through the day. But every now and then, I see when the pandemic gets to him and some little thing like too many spoons in a drawer, and he'll blow up over that. I don't want to laugh because it kind of makes him more angry, but, you know, just the way it hits different people, you know?
I have a lot of short conversations during the course of my workday with a lot of different people. And one of the conversations that I have is, you know, how are you doing? And I find it kind of wonderful that people are willing to say, eh, instead of, I'm fine, the way we do to avoid burdening most of the people when they're asking us that and don't really need to know the ins and outs of our day and our state of mental health. So when people say, hanging in there, I really appreciate that they're willing to acknowledge the difficulty of what we're all doing.
Something that I didn't anticipate would be a result of this pandemic is that we're all a little bit less polite to each other in public. There are other ways to show politeness, like keeping a 6-foot space between the people around you and putting on your mask when you're passing by and that sort of thing. But things like holding the door open for someone, or I was at the grocery store and a woman was coming out of the store and something rolled off the bottom level of her cart, and I pointed to it and I said, oh, something fell off, but I made no move to help her hold the cart so it didn't roll away. I just kind of watched her, and I just felt so sorry and yet unsure. And then even just passing someone on the street, I find myself trying to smile at them in a friendly way and then awkwardly just raising my eyebrows instead. It's a sort of a, on the grand scheme of things, a pretty minimal casualty of the pandemic. But I think it's probably having a greater effect than we realize.
Some people respond to conversations about our crazy pandemic era that we're all living through with sort of cheerleading statements, and I appreciate those too. You know, we'll get through this, stay safe, that kind of well-wishing and pumping up is good for us too. The only response that I find increasingly annoying is the people that say, well, I'm done with COVID. I just am flabbergasted by the fact that they feel like they have a choice. They can have a choice to how they live their life right now, but they don't have a choice about this being here.
My husband, who is very laid back, went to the grocery store with the boys, and he came back and he was all kinds of flustered, and I was like, what's going on? He actually really enjoys going to the grocery store with the kids, which I think is like marvelous. So him coming home upset was odd, and I'm like, what happened? And he was like, oh, the signs on the floor. I am so done with the signs on the floor. And, you know, it's just one of those moments where you're just, you know, the earth shakes just a little bit beneath you again. And you're reminded of how unstable the ground is. And that there are arrows in the grocery store. And there are times when I envision myself kneeling down and peeling it off with my bare hands. I don't care what it takes for my little fingers. They could bleed. I would love to just get down there and just scrape them off.
When I step out into mask land to buy groceries or go to the hardware store, it seems as if most people have gone back to a semblance of the way they lived before COVID. Crowds gather at Trader Joe's, which seems to have loosened its regulations. There's an incredibly long line of masked people staring at cell phones waiting to get into Patagonia every day. People seem quite comfortable doing the right thing, wearing the masks, which is very good because the practice keeps the virus from spreading. But in this comfortable acceptance, it seems there's a desire, a drive to return to shopping as perhaps an answer.
When this whole thing started, my husband was upset that our church closed down. I mean, worldwide. And he wanted them to stand up for the First Amendment and to speak up for the people, for freedom and for rights and for religious freedom. And when that didn't happen, he was really upset and disappointed and feeling like, what can you believe in if the leadership in the church that you attend don't defend their own rights?
We have freedom, and it really is true. I know it sounds cliche. Every day you hear it on a million commercials, but you know, we have what we have because of the previous generations giving up, growing gardens, going into factories, making ammunition, you know, doing the hard stuff in the world wars that, you know, we've read about in textbooks. But I feel like now there have been generations since that, and possibly myself included, where, you know, wearing a mask is not a big sacrifice. And we just do it, you know, and we could be out of this thing, out of the woods, or at least the numbers wouldn't be up on people getting sick.
And that's when he began to find out what was really going on, was that the church has been wanting to come back. They've also been polling their people, apparently not us, but, and finding out that people don't want to. And that they're really scared. You know, there may be people who are so permanently traumatized that they may not ever come back in person. So this was an eye-opener for him. It's like, oh. So I've been upset with the church, but the church has just been responding to the congregation.
Many years ago, this group was very, very important to my life. And my life got crazy and I started working and I wasn't able to be part of this group anymore. But now that I'm not working, I was so excited to jump back into it. And they were trying their very best to make everything as normal as possible. And I went to a meeting and it seemed so normal. I mean, it was different for sure. But still, it just seemed really nice to be around these women again. And then today I get an email saying that we have to impose some COVID guidelines.
I think that this is just going to change the world from here on out. There are going to be people who literally have PTSD from this event and may never recuperate, may never recover. I think we're going to be seeing masks from now on. Even if it's only a small portion of people, I think there will be people who will never give up their masks. And I can't judge them because this was done to them. It's not their fault.
The one thing that I had for myself that I was looking forward to, Now I can't do it. Because if I do, I have to wear a mask. The problem isn't the mask wearing per se. You know, of course I wear masks to go out and all that. It's not that. It's more the anxiety that comes with the policing of the COVID guidelines. So for example, one of the COVID guidelines in this situation was, when you walk into the building, you must wear a mask. When you sit down in your seat and presumably at your own table, you can take off your mask. But then if you were ever to get up and go to the bathroom or anywhere else in the building, you would need to wear a mask. You know, it just, to me, if it leaves many things up to other people looking at you and saying you're not following the rules. Or what if I forget? Am I going to look like an uncooperative jerk? Or are people going to have more mercy on me and more grace? Now, that was probably the case, especially these group of people. But still, that's just where my anxiety takes me, and I can't deal with that. I'm trying so hard to stay afloat right now. There's just nothing like this COVID anxiety. And I wish that it would just leave me alone. This is something I was really looking forward to for my own self-care, you know, for my own need for community and fellowship, for my need to share my beautiful baby with other women, you know, to say, hey, hold my baby. And now I can't because of COVID. Because of what COVID does to me.
Part 2, Faith and the Pandemic.
What exactly are we scared of when it comes to coronavirus? Ultimately, it's death. Nobody wants to die. Nobody wants their loved ones to die. Nobody wants to be the reason that another person dies. That said, through my faith journey, I have really detached myself from this fear of death. I have a healthy fear of it. It's not like I'm going to go out and start jaywalking in the middle of downtown and hope for the best, right? Like, I'm still using caution
I follow traffic signs, I go to the doctor, I'm living in this world and I'm doing my best to stay here for as long as God wants me to be on this earth. But I also have come to the conclusion that I do not want to live forever. And there is so much freedom in saying that. I mean, sweet Jesus, please don't let me live on this earth forever and ever. It's miserable, right? Like, no, thank you. There has to be something greater than this. This can't be it. And so I believe in heaven. And I believe that, you know, hopefully at the end of my life, that's where I will end up. And if death is what I'm scared of, I'm actually looking forward to what happens after that. And so it takes that fear away.
It's funny because the thing that really knocked me down in this pandemic wasn't my husband getting laid off or having our plans to take a sabbatical year put on hold or the kids' school closing or having to miss out on a trip we'd really been looking forward to with my extended family. It was this little moment in August when all at once our life just kind of stopped feeling sustainable. We had just learned that our school would be continuing with distance learning, which wasn't a surprise. We expected that, but you know, we thought we'd be okay. And then the friends that we had kind of assumed would be doing life with us, we found out that they were pairing up with somebody else and they were not able to partner with us. And then the wildfires came to California. And for a little while, we had the worst air in the world and we couldn't even go outside. And then our preschool shut down because one of the teachers had COVID. And I mean, this all happened in like a 48-hour period, and it just felt like overnight our life had gone up in flames. So we packed up as much of our lives as we could fit in our car, and we left. We rented our house to our friends, and we drove across the country to be near my husband's family.
I have memories of my son being delighted with remote learning and being ecstatic when his report card for the fourth quarter came back with all A's. And he was convinced that remote learning was the most brilliant thing ever. The smile on his face is hard to describe. It was luminous, I would say.
We've been here in Massachusetts for a little over a month, and I still really miss our life in California. I miss our friends and our neighborhood and our church and our school. I miss the weather and the running trails and the bike rides in the Oakland Hills and our little house even and the lemon and orange trees in our backyard. You know, there was a lot about our life that was really sweet there. But there's also a real sweetness about our life here that I'm trying to not overlook. Our life is really small here. It's just being around the kids and my in-laws and working on the podcast. It's exactly the same every single day. And, you know, for once I'm okay with that. It feels like kind of a relief to have life be so straightforward.
I also will always remember the generosity of my mother-in-law who was staying with us, visiting when the pandemic first started and the shutdown here in Chicago began. She stayed with us for 2.5 months because she knew that two parents working full time could not supervise remote learning for a 10-year-old boy effectively.
I think we're learning about how to be the family that we've really tried and failed to be for a really long time. I mean, we're learning how to have fun together again. I think we're learning how to relax, how to let Sunday be a true Sabbath where we don't have to accomplish anything and where we give ourselves permission to just not do any work. And yeah, our future is totally uncertain and, you know, it's been a year of loss, but I think maybe the best thing that's come from this time is just realizing that contentment is not actually about having great circumstances or even security. I think contentment is learning to find gratitude no matter what's going on, and just learning to look around you and be not just grateful, but delighted by what you have.
The lowest point of this time will never leave my mind. It was a suicide attempt for me, and I had a very difficult year beginning at the end of November 2019. I had a failed surgical intervention in January. I had to make a very difficult decision about future employment in April, after the pandemic had already instigated a shutdown in Chicago about 3 weeks before. The school year ended on a low note for me. I was in a cycling accident in July. And so that, coupled with an upcoming surgery to remove one of my organs, all combined together to make life seem overwhelming. And then when my son's own mental illness started flaring up this fall, I couldn't take it anymore. It has been extremely humbling, but there has been good that has resulted from this. Humility and a newly vivid awareness of exactly how much I depend on God's daily, hourly, and even God's minute-by-minute presence. Our parish also made these lawn signs back probably in March, and the March beginning of April, when this all really was like heavy. And it says, "Be not afraid, hope will prevail." And I've looked at that sign so many times in my times of fear, both with pandemic and with parenting and with marriage, like all these, you know, hardships. And just look out there and I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, hope, hope, hope.
My faith has really reminded me of who I am and that I'm not in control and that it's actually okay that I'm not in control. There's this great parable that Jesus tells to help people understand what God is like, and it's the story about a family, and the youngest son asks his dad for his inheritance while his dad is still alive, which would have been like a huge insult. And so the son goes off and squanders all this money and becomes destitute. And he knows he's insulted his dad so much that there's basically no way he can ever go back. But finally, he just gets so desperate that he goes back, and his plan is like, okay, I'm going to just beg my father not to take me back as his son, but to like make me his lowest level hired hand just so he can survive. But his father sees him in the distance and he runs to him and he is like praising God that he's alive. And then he throws a huge party. That's like his first reaction. He's just so glad that he's home and everything's forgiven. And, you know, I love that picture of God. It just reminds me that no matter how much of a mess I am, God actually doesn't see me that way. He doesn't see a mess. He's just really glad I'm home. When I really get that, that is about the deepest comfort that I know.
I would say I'm a spiritual person. I believe in a God. So I would say, if anything, this time in my life has given me more space to explore that spirituality and how we are all connected. and we think of ourselves as individuals, but really we're a part of a whole. And what we do matters. And this, more than anything, has shown us that.
You know, when you read the Bible, if you actually read the Bible, we're told to love our enemies and actually to pray for the people who are not treating us well. And I just wonder what the church might look like if we actually did that. Like, how different would we be as a world if not even everybody, just Christians, just people who ascribe to this faith, if we actually did that? I just wonder, would we be in this place that we're in right now?
It's really our job while we're here, while we have the time on the planet, to help make it a better place for everyone. To not take people's rights away, to not make life harder for people. How can we do what we can do with the resources we have to make life better for everyone and not just for ourselves?
Always in my life, the moments where I have felt closest to God have been either immediately before or immediately after the lowest moments of my life. Learning my mom cheated on my dad, I had to take sacrament from a very toxic ex one time, I was told to apply for another job, of course, the suicide attempt. And I really don't know what to do with that. It does seem like intimacy with God really ought to be possible without painful experiences, but that hasn't been my experience. I'm reminded always when I think about this odd feature of my faith, this quote from the novel Till We Have Faces, which is by C.S. Lewis. And he says, "Holy places are dark places. It is life and strength, not knowledge and words, that we get in them. Holy wisdom is not clear and thin like water, but thick and dark like blood." That's it. That's what holy places are for me. They've always been thick and dark and horrible and wonderful and beautiful and brutal. But I would never not want to be there. And I would never not want the life and the strength that are now mine as a result of living into and through those holy places.
Hi friends, it's a challenging time for many of us. If you're feeling desperate and like you might take your own life and you need someone to talk to, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. They're around 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's completely confidential. You can reach them at 1-800-273-8255. Take care of yourselves, friends. I'd like to say a huge thank you to Joan, Britta, Karen, Christina, Diane, Amanda, Carl Ann, Anna, Angela, Laura, and Lauren, whose voices are coming to you from Maine, California, New Hampshire, Arizona, Florida, Illinois, Massachusetts, Singapore, and Romania. The Transmission Times is created by me, Katie Semro. Out to sea, no time to pray.